Thank you to Rabbi Shaked, and the feelings, of course, are mutual. The love, the affection to this incredible institution that has and does so benefit my own family and my extended family, i.e. our South Florida community. I don't need to tell all of you how lucky, fortunate, blessed you are to have teachers, administrators who love you, invested in you, believe in you, and selflessly are devoted to you, and how fortunate you are to be at the amazing Hadar High School for Girls. So we're here to talk about Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a bizarre holiday. Lag BaOmer is tomorrow night, Friday. And tomorrow night, if you'd like, there's all of a sudden the Simchas are going to come back. I've got two tomorrow night. And then we have a shul event tomorrow night. It's a pyromaniac convention. You will see on the front lawn, the landscape has already been alerted to be here on Friday morning with new grass. Because every year Lag BaOmer night, people gather. We blast music. We haven't heard music since Pesach. And we make an enormous bonfire. We sing and we dance and we're festive and we barbecue. We're so happy and we're so thrilled. And the question simply is, why? Why? What's Lag BaOmer about? What are we celebrating? What are we rejoicing for? What are we dancing? What has changed? What is different? Why are we happy? So if I were to wake one of you in the middle of the night and ask you that question, everybody knows. Why do we celebrate Lag BaOmer? Because the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. 12,000 times 2 is 24,000. 24,000 students. And the 24,000 students didn't get along. And because of that, can you imagine an epidemic, a plague, a virus spread among them? And there were 24,000 deaths. But you know when they stopped dying? The deaths stopped and Rabbi Akiva stopped going to funerals. By the way, if you do the math, the 24,000 died in 1 month. Do the math. Minus Shabbos. Let's assume they didn't die on Shabbos. Or there weren't funerals on Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva went to 1,000 funerals a day. He didn't really go because you can't go to 1,000 funerals a day. If you attend one funeral, you know that it breaks your heart. And you know how exhausted emotionally, physically, spiritually you are. There were 1,000 funerals a day for a month. 24,000 students died. So they stopped dying in Lag BaOmer, and therefore, yippee, we turn on the music, we make a bonfire, we roast marshmallows, we make a barbecue, we sing and we dance and we party. And that makes complete sense, right? Wrong. Nobody gets up from Shiva and has a party. Nobody finishes mourning grieving. Nobody marks the end of a loss by all of a sudden having music and a bonfire and fireworks and a party. So what in the world are we celebrating or marking on Lag BaOmer? What is it all about? What are we meant to experience? How are we meant to be transformed? What is the energy of the day that we are meant to tap into? Most people don't think about that. You know why? They're too busy getting a haircut, and they're too excited to put on the music. And they're just relieved and happy that the days of the Omer that we mourn and grieve are behind us. So I'm just relieved. I'm just grateful. Let's move on. Just asking you to stop and to think about it. What will be different tomorrow night? And if the only thing that we're marking is the end of the tragic death, the end of an epidemic and plague, you come back from 24,000 funerals, and the last day, the last 1,000 people are buried, you don't make fireworks and a barbecue and a fire. You don't turn on the music and dance and celebrate. So what's Lag BaOmer all about? I want to share with you a few ideas until I'm told we are out of time. I've proven that I can keep going. So you'll tell me, you'll wave me down. You'll wave me down when we're out of time. In fact, I'll tell you that according to many, it has nothing to do with this. That question is so compelling. That question is so disturbing. That question, in fact, is so upsetting to even contemplate or think that we would party because we stopped dying. That many say Lag BaOmer is not about that at all. It's a misnomer to think that Lag BaOmer in any way correlates to the end of the plague or the end of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. In that case, what does it correlate with? Now, the date Lag BaOmer, by the way, is significant. It's the year of Shimon Bar Yochai, who is considered to be the author of the Zohar, the great work of Jewish mysticism, the Kabbalah. I say is considered to be because that's our tradition. I don't want to confuse anyone, but in scholarship and in history, it's unclear if he's the actual author, literally the author, symbolically the author. But Shimon Bar Yochai is associated as the father of Jewish mysticism, of Kabbalah. He lived in a cave. He was being persecuted and pursued. He lived with his son. They tried to come out. They weren't yet ready. They burned everyone with their eyes. They had to go back in and a little bit more time in the cave. And they came out and they introduced the world to the idea that not only do we have a physical existence, not only are there laws of physics, but we also have a metaphysical existence. There's a physical world, a material world. There's who we see in the mirror. There's our body. There's the physical world we live in, the chair you're sitting in, the desk you're sitting at. But equal and opposite, there's also a metaphysical world. we're living in two different dimensions simultaneously. We're physical and we're spiritual. And just like there are laws of physics, there are laws of metaphysics. And Kabbalah is the study of the laws of metaphysics. To understand the deeper dimension, and to understand and to be able to tap into and maybe even manipulate the energy in the world. Not just the physical and that which we can see, but also the invisible, the metaphysical. That is the notion of the Lag BaOmer, the mysticism of Shimon Bar Yochai. In fact, that's likely part of the association of the bonfires and the fire. Fire is always symbolizes the soul, the spirit, the mystical component of who we are. Person dies, we light a 7-day candle. On a Yahrzeit, we light a Yahrzeit candle. For Yisker, we light a Yisker candle. The candle, Ki Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the candle is symbolic of the neshama of a person because that fire is intangible. You can't hold on to it, you can't grab it, but yet you can feel its heat, you can feel its warmth, and you can benefit from its light. The fire is like a soul. You can't grab onto it, you can't hold it, it's not tangible, but you can feel its warmth and its heat, and you can feel and you can benefit from its light. And that's why the soul is always compared to a candle. We always have a candle on those occasions that we are invoking the soul. The bonfire of Lag BaOmer is the mysticism, the metaphysics, the spirituality, Rosh Shimon Bar Chai, the Zohar, not my topic. My beard is gray enough and I'm old enough, but I don't know enough about Kabbalah, Zohar, mysticism, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and I'm not going to stand before you and tell you, but that is the most famous association, Meron, going to the kever of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and so on and so forth. There are other Yahrzeits. Who else died on Lag BaOmer? Who are the Yahrzeit we observe? We are the spiritual heirs of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, but we're also the spiritual heirs, at least the Ashkenazim in the room, of the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, in your Halacha Shir. I know you recently, some of you were reviewing the laws of Bishul. In Halacha Shir, you undoubtedly encountered the rulings of the Rama. The Rama was Rav Moshe Isserles. He lived in Krakow in the 16th century, which is a city in Poland. If you would go to Poland today, you can still go to his shul. It's still extant. It still exists. And you can see where the Rama stood, where the Rama davened. Fascinating where the Chazan davened in the Rama shul, consistent with his ruling that Mimamakim Krasich Hashem. The Chazan shouldn't stand more elevated. Mimamakim. Hashem, I cry out to you from the depths. I don't cry out to you from being on top of the world. I cry out to you from feeling like I'm in a dungeon. I'm underground. So therefore, in the Rama Shul, the Chazan doesn't step up to the Bima to lead the davening. In the Rama Shul, the Chazan steps down. There's an indent in the floor, and the Chazan steps down. Mimamakim krasich Hashem. It's an amazing thing to see, to be in the Shul of the Rama. Uvnei Yisrael yotzim biyad Rama. Pasuk and the word Rama spelled differently there, talking about when we left Egypt. But Ashkenazim say, Bnei Yisrael yotzim biyad Rama. The Rama is the halachic authority of Ashkenazim, and we rely on his rulings. Most of the time, he simply is consistent and endorses the rulings of the Mechaber, Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And when he writes his mappa, when he writes his gloss, when he spreads his tablecloth on the set table, the Shulchan Aruch, when the Rama disagrees, Svardim Paskin like the Mechaber, Ashkenazim follow the Rama, Uvnei Yisrael Yotzim Biyad Rama, and Lag BaOmer is the Yahrzeit of the Rama, a very significant day, also not what I want to talk to you about. So far I've spoken about a lot of things that I don't want to talk to you about. So what do I want to talk to you about? The Chassam Sofer, who I believe we have a relative, at least some relatives are able to publicly acknowledge they're related. So we have a relative of the Chassam Sofer in the room. Chassam Sofer in his Tshuvos, Chelek Beis, Yoredei Simon Reish Lamed Gimel, says the following astounding thing. He, of course, asks the same question as we do, which is, how could it be a happy day and a festive day and a holiday because people stop dying? When people stop dying, you know what you are? You're relieved. You're comforted. You're not happy. You don't party. So the Chassam Sofer was very, very bothered. He couldn't understand the extent of the celebrations of Lag BaOmer. And in fact, in this tshuva, he writes something astounding. He says, Mitam ze ba'atzmo ha'isi ani min aprushim keben drusoy shelo tzarech liyoshev sham. One of the reasons I don't move to Israel and live there is because I would sit out the festivities of Lag BaOmer and Meron, and I don't want to be an outlier. I don't want to be purush min hatzibur. I don't want to separate myself from others. So it's easier to remain in Pressburg. It's easier to remain outside of Israel, because if I were to go to Israel and not participate in the celebrations of Lag BaOmer to the extent that those around me do, I'd be an outlier. And I don't want to join with them in that, because the Chassam Sofer was tremendously bothered by the level of celebration on a day which should be a day of relief, a day of grieving, not a day of celebration. So the Chassam Sofer says maybe Lag BaOmer is festive for another reason. He gives an alternate suggestion. Nothing to do with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and nothing to do with the Ramah, and nothing to do with Rabbi Kiva's students stop dying. Says the Chassam Sofer, it has to do with this. And I'll give you a little introduction. Once upon a time, I was coming out of shul one day. This goes back many years. In fact, if you want to know how many years, a person handed me a CD. Do any of you know what a CD is? A little round disc. You used to put it in a drive, and it would spin, and then your computer would read from it, or your car would play some audio from it. It was a disc, a CD. What's it called? What does CD stand for? A contact disc? A CD. His person hands me a CD in the parking lot of the shul, and they said, Rabbi, this is Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is a great motivational speaker. He's a very well-known, popular motivational speaker. People pay enormous amount of money to pack arenas in order to hear him on stage, pump them up, motivate them, get them to transform their life. The great Tony Robbins, big, big motivational speaker. So this person obviously felt that I was not motivated enough, and they handed me a CD, and they said, Rabbi, this motivation, this is unbelievable. Tony Robbins is phenomenal. You've got to listen to this. It's going to change your world. It's going to change your life. You could use it. Here's the CD. Put it in your car. Maybe it was too early. We didn't even have CD players in our car yet. But wherever you have your CD player, play the CD. Tony Robbins, unbelievable, going to change your life. So I thought, maybe, Taka, I'm not motivated enough. I got to get motivated. I got to listen to Tony Robbins. Clearly, I got a lot of work to do. So when I had a chance, I was going somewhere, and I had time, I popped in the Tony Robbins CD, and he starts out and he says the following. Now, I want to tell you that I've learned a lot from Tony Robbins over the year. He's worthwhile. He has a lot of very interesting insight. He's a great motivator. But this particular point, he taught me nothing new. Because the CD began and Tony Robbins says, I'm going to tell you the secret to how to have a successful day. Who doesn't want a successful day? You want to do fantastic in school. You want to socially be amazing with your friends. You want to have a great day at work. You want to come home and make a lot of money. You want to be an amazing family member, mother, father, son, daughter, brother, sister. I'm going to tell you, Tony Robbins says, how to have a successful day. You want a high energy day? You want a day that at the end of it, you look back and say, what a killer day, what a successful day. I got everything out of this day that I could. He said, I'm going to tell you the secret, and here it is. When you wake up in the morning, the very first thing you need to do is an attitude of gratitude. So when you wake up in the morning, he says, the very first thing you need to do, before you brush your teeth, before you get dressed, before that cup of coffee, before you check the paper or the scores, the first thing you need to do is say thank you. I'm grateful I'm alive. I'm grateful I could breathe. I'm grateful I have a roof over my home. I'm grateful for the day that I have ahead. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for whatever you want to wake up and say that morning. But begin the day with an attitude of gratitude. Now you can imagine, I listened to that. I paused it and I said, seriously? I needed Tony Robbins to tell me that? What do we wake up every day and say? Very first words on our lips. By the way, the very first words on our lips are not, even though more grammatically accurate, they're not ani modeh. Translate ani modeh. I am grateful. Instead, we wake up every day and we say modeh, or according to many, you young ladies should be saying moda ani. Translate that. Grateful am I. None of you speak that way. Not on text, not in real person, not on any platform. None of you would ever walk in and say, Abba, grateful am I that you didn't point out that I'm related to you, or whatever it is. None of you would ever formulate something and say, grateful am I. So why do we start out our day so awkwardly saying and formulating something in such a bizarre way? Why not say, ani modeh, I am grateful. Any suggestion? Okay, yes. Very good. I think part of the reason is because the first word on your lips when you wake up in the morning cannot be I, me. The world revolves around me. Everyone needs to make me happy. Everything needs to fall in line with what I want. I'm at the center of the universe. Hello, world. My first word of the day is I. In order to reverse that, we formulate the sentence awkwardly. We're willing to do that. So we don't say ani modeh, I am grateful, which is the way we would normally speak. We start and we say, moda ani, grateful am I. So that I is not the first word of the day. We wake up with an attitude of gratitude. We don't wake up with any sense of rights and entitlements. The world doesn't owe us. We don't have anything coming to us. But rather, we wake up with a sense of duty and obligation. Not what the world can give to us, but what can I bring to the world? Not what are my rights and privileges, but what are my duties and obligations? Not I and me at the center of the universe, but how can I be of service to others, and most of all, service to the Ribbono Shel Olam, service to Hashem. So I said to myself, Moda Ani, but saying Moda'ani since I could speak. I don't need Tony Robbins to tell me, wake up with an attitude of gratitude in order to have the most blessed day. Why am I telling you this? Because if you look in the Siddur, if you're still in the Sphere account, you'll notice that every night we don't just say the number. We don't just recite what number we're up to, but right afterwards, if you look in the Siddur, there's a little part that nobody knows what it means or pays any attention to, which is that there's an energy, a midah, for every of the Sphiros. The seven Sphiros, each week has a Sphira associated, and then every day of the week has a Sphira associated. So does anybody know? You don't have a Siddur in front of you. But if you were to check, and you were to open the Siddur, or your app that reminds you to count the Sphira, you would see that the 33rd day of the Omer, Lag BaOmer, do you know what the Midah is? The energy within the energy of that day is Hod Shebahod. Gratitude within gratitude. Lag BaOmer is a day of gratitude. So first of all, there is some gratitude in the relief of the end of an epidemic and a plague that killed 24,000 people, but that's not a reason to celebrate. Says the Chassam Sofer, and I'm not going to take you through it right now because we don't have the time and frankly it's not that interesting, but says the Chassam Sofer, if you all look at a calendar and you take out your Chumash and you plot the timeline of the events and the way they unfolded, do you know what you're going to find? Do you know what started on Lag BaOmer? On the 33rd day of the Omer, something extraordinary began. It fell from the sky. I'll give you a little hint. It wasn't hail, it wasn't rain, and it wasn't snow. You know what it was? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It fell from the sky, the man. The man began to fall on Lag BaOmer. So says the Chassam Sofer, if the man began to fall on Lag BaOmer, do you know what Lag BaOmer is all about? It is a day of gratitude. So you say, gratitude? I don't have man. Imagine if you at school at lunch where you said, whatever you're in the mood for, milkshakes, fleishakes, sushi, pizza, Chinese, whatever you want. You just sign up for the lunch program. You get your mun on a platter, and then it tastes like whatever you want. But we don't have mun today. We got tofu, and let's hope the mun tasted better than that. We don't have mun today. We don't have mun. It doesn't fall from the sky. We don't have it. So what are you grateful for? The answer is, we don't have mun, but we have the equivalent of mun. You know what mun means? Why was it called mun? This miraculous food. This miraculous food. Why was it called mun? Do you know what the word mun means? If you were to go to Israel, or an Israeli pizza store here in America, and you wanted a slice of pizza, what would you ask for? A maneh, can I have a portion? A maneh, man means a portion. So the name of this miraculous food that fell from the sky was, you ready for how creative we got? Portion. Did the portion fall today? Did you get a portion? What's happening with the portion? What did your portion taste like? Did you make a bracha before and after your portion? You're fighting with your siblings over whose portion is bigger. The whole name of this fancy miraculous food that fell from the sky was portion. Because the truth is, every portion that we have is a gift from above. And whether the food falls from the sky or grows from the ground, it's no less miraculous. And says the Chassam Sofer, the fact that the man began to fall on Lag BaOmer, the holiday of Lag BaOmer is a day of gratitude. It is a day that we are appreciative. It is a day that we see even the natural as supernatural. In the Halalah Gadol, the Perek of Tehillim that we say on Shabbos mornings, you know the one with two columns? Whatever, Kili Olam Chasto. Something, Kili Olam Chasto. We review history. God, miracles and plagues and splitting of a sea. And you took us out of Egypt. You created the heavens and the earth. Kili Olam Chasto. Your kindness endures forever. Anyone remember the penultimate line, the second to last line of the Hodul Hashem Kitov Kili Olam Chasto? You remember what it is? Nosein Lechem Lechol Basar Kili Olam Chasto. Now, does that make sense to you? This is our Tehillim. You ready? God, you made the heavens and the earth, and you made these incredible natural parks, and you made amazing natural phenomena, and then you suspended those rules when you brought 10 plagues against the Egyptians, and then you miraculously split the sea, and these extraordinary events and miracles of history, and oh yeah, when I go to Publix, there's bread on the shelf, Kili Olam Chasto. Oh yeah, when I got home, there was dinner, Kili Olam Chasto. Does that not seem a little pedestrian? Does that not seem a little anticlimactic? That's the big end? That's the big finish? This poem of Kili Olam Chasto, let me list the most extraordinary, the most miraculous, the most amazing things. Kili Olam Chasto, and when I went shopping, there was bread. Kili Olam Chasto. You know what David HaMelech I think is telling us there? That when you go shopping and there's bread, it is no less miraculous than the man falling from heaven. You know what the only difference between the man falling from heaven and it coming out of the ground is? We've come to expect it to come out of the ground. We have what we call science to explain how and why it comes out of the ground. Do you control? Can we control it coming out of the ground? No less than we can control it falling from the sky. Yeah, we can plow and plant and harvest. But guess what if there's no rain? And guess what if there's, you know, a plague on the crop? And guess what if the weather doesn't cooperate with us? We go hungry. We don't live in an agrarian society. We're not farmers, although I have a little garden holding on for dear life in my backyard. We are not farmers, but we don't rely on the society. But so it says the Chassam Sofer, you know what Lag BaOmer is? It's a day of gratitude. What are the things you take for granted? Hod shebahod. What are the things that we take for granted in our lives that on this event we say thank you? What are the things that we take for granted for which we come and say thank you? Hod shebahod. A day of gratitude, a day of deep and profound appreciation. It's not about students dying, not about Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai, not necessarily about the Ramah of Moshe Isserles. You know what it is? Hod shebahod. The mon began to fall. And tell me, is that worth making a holiday? The fact that we stop and say thank you for the things we take for granted. Is that worth a holiday? That itself is worth a holiday. So Rav Druk, in his Sefer, on this week's Parsha Emor, because there are no coincidences in life, Emor includes within it Sfiras HaOmer, and he quotes from his father, the Drash Mordechai, Rav Mordechai Druk, who wonders about the Sfiras HaOmer. I'm not going to ask how many people are still in the count, but we make a bracha every night. Shikir Shalom, it's Zavet Sivanu, Al Sfiras HaOmer. God, you sanctify us, you elevate us with your mitzvos, and this is a blessing all on counting the Omer. On counting the Omer. Counting the Omer. Shouldn't it be the bracha, he asks, and many others? Wouldn't it make much more sense for the bracha to be al mitzvos, not al sfiras haomer, al mitzvah sfiras yimei haomer? We're not counting an Omer. We're counting days of the Omer. What's the difference between counting the Omer and counting days of the Omer? Counting days of the Omer is what we're doing. There are 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos, and we're supposed to count up all 49, which bring us to the base of the mountain together. By the end of the count, on the 50th day, we're standing together back at the base of the mountain, at the holiest moment, the greatest moment of revelation of all time, the most seminal moment of all of human history, when God shared his sacred Torah with us. 49 days we count, and then we're at the base of the mountain together. So what we're doing in this mitzvah is Asviras Yemei HaOmer. We're counting the days of the Omer. We're not counting the Omer. Now, to be bothered by this question, you have to know what an Omer is. What is the Omer? What is an Omer? Anyone know what an Omer is? You could raise your hand. Don't be shy. What's an Omer? There was a Korban Omer. There was a sacrifice. What was the Korban Omer? There was a certain measure of barley that was brought. Reishis Katsir. You took the Omer from the Reishis Katsir. The beginning of your barley harvest was brought as the Korban Omer, the offering of the Omer, when? On what would be our second day of Pesach, what is the first day of Chol HaMoed in Israel. That is when the new harvest became permissible because you brought barley from the new harvest and you offered it as a Korban HaOmer. And that Korban HaOmer launches the count of the Omer. That's when you begin to count the Omer. But the Korban HaOmer, the sacrifice of the Omer, anyone know what the word Omer means? We're counting it every night. We're making this bracha every night. It's worth knowing what it means. An Omer is a certain measure. We talk about ounces, and we talk about volume, and we talk about weight, and we talk about... Omer is a measure. So the Korban HaOmer was a certain measure of barley. In fact, the harvesting of that barley in the field was a big celebration. It was a big party. They went to the field south of Yerushalayim. Those got the most sunlight, and it was the best barley. And you would invite everybody with pomp and circumstance with a big celebration for the harvest of that Omer. For the harvest of that Omer. Everybody would stand around and as you harvested that barley to bring that first Omer. The Omer is a measure. Omer is an amount. In fact, you ready for this? You know where we first see the word Omer being used in the Torah? I shouldn't say first. It's used several times in the Torah. But one of the most pronounced places the word Omer is used in the Torah is, do you know how much mun fell from the sky? An Omer worth of mun. Go back and look, and when you see the Torah describes that the mun begins to fall, the amount of mun that fell is an Omer. And therefore, what the Omer really represents to us, the notion of the Omer, and why we're counting the Omer. We're not counting the days of the Omer. We're counting the Omer in our life. We're counting the portions, and the measurements, and the gifts, and the blessings. These are 49 days where I'm meant to stop each day and count. Make my life count, and make my gifts count, and make the blessings in my life count. What are the things I take for granted? that maybe people around me can't. Family members, a home, possessions, things. What are the skills and gifts that I have? IQ, artistic ability, athletic ability. Am I funny, creative? What comes easy to me? What's a challenge for me? What are the things in our lives we take for granted? What portion have we been given? What gift, what measure, and what portion do we have? And Sfiras HaOmer is not Sfiras Yemei HaOmer. It's accounting not of the days of the Omer. It's accounting of the Omer itself. He has a long arichas, a long beautiful description of this. In Sefer Shmos, I'll read you the pasuk. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, kach tzantzenes achas, v'tein shama malei HaOmer man. When the man first fell, and there was an instruction to take a portion of it and to set it aside in perpetuity so that forever people would look back and say, this wasn't just some fable or fairy tale, it really fell. It was in the Aron, next to the Luchos and the Brochen Luchos, and the first Sefer Torah was this tzinsenes, was this package of man. So when Moshe is instructed to put some mun into a tzantzenes and to store it, so we'll always know, how much was he told to put? Tein shama malei ha-omer mun. When we're counting the omer, just like counting the mun that falls from the sky, from heaven, it is a great gift. It's our portion. It's what we have. It's what Hashem has designated and given to us. And it's our responsibility to appreciate. It's our responsibility to embrace, to take advantage to that gift of that mun. So all of that is point number one. Point number two, I want to go to Rabbi Akiva. So the Chassam Sofer sees Lag BaOmer having nothing to do with the students of Rabbi Akiva. Hod Shebahod, all it is about joy, gratitude, appreciation, recognizing the portion, the gift that has fallen from heaven into our lap, into our lives, into our lifestyle, pausing to say thank you and to appreciate it and to celebrate. If that's not worth a bonfire and a barbecue, if that's not worth fireworks and a haircut, if that's not worth music and dancing, I don't know what is. What Lag BaOmer should look like is a group of people who are singing and dancing to their gratitude, singing and dancing for their portion that they've been given and that they've been gifted, and that has fallen from heaven right into our lap, no less than the man. And that every night we make a bracha for 49 straight nights, al mitzvahs, al shekhar shomis mitzvahnu, al sfiras ha'omer. We're counting the omer. We're not counting the days of the omer, we're counting the omer, the portion in our life. But I want to go to another understanding based on the chidah. The Chida, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, also our Parsha. The Chida, Rav Chaim David Yosef Azulai, was a Kohen. Our Parsha Emor says that a Kohen, if you haven't heard of Bashaki to say Kohen, Isha Zona Azulai, Isha Zona, I just said the whole Pasuk, but now I forgot it. Isha Zona V'chal Lo Yikachu. So that is an acronym that spells the word Azulai. He was a Kohen. His last name was Azulai, as a reminder of whom he's not allowed to marry. Parsha says you have to honor, aside from having to honor your Rosh Shiva, your Menahel, because he is who he is and deserves it. He's a Kohen. The Kiddashto, you have to honor. You can't ask him for favors, you can't do anything for you. You have to give him all the kavod that he deserves, intrinsically, and that he's earned, plenty of which he deserves of both. So the Chida says the following. He says, great question. Why in the world are we partying and celebrating because people stop dying? Nobody normal does that. We don't do that. You don't get up from it. No one has ever called me and said, Rabbi, I finished Shiva, or it's the end of my Shloshim. What are the Minhagim? I say, some go to the cemetery, some light a candle, some give tzedakah, some do extra learning, some will sit with their family and have a meal and talk about the person. I don't tell anyone, put on the music, shave and a haircut, fireworks, bonfire, sing and dance. It would be the last time they called me about anything if that were my answer. So why are we doing this here? And Rabbi Chida says the following. Rabbi Akiva lost 24,000 students. Notice, by the way, that the Gemara does not tell us that he lost. It doesn't tell us that he lost 24,000 students. What does it tell us he lost? 12,000 pairs. Why give us the math problem? Enough math. Why do we have to do the math? Just say 24,000. Don't make us do the math 12,000 times 2. Elamai, what is the Gemara trying to communicate? What were our rabbis trying to communicate to us? Is to see them not as one unit of 24,000, but to see them what? 24,000 pairs. How did they get along? What was their relationship? Why did they die? Why did they die? The Gemara Yevamos there tells us, Shilonagu kavod zebaze, because they couldn't honor, they couldn't respect one another. Shilonagu kavod zebaze. They weren't respectful, they weren't considerate, they didn't give the benefit of the doubt, they didn't treat with dignity the other person. They were disrespectful. Now, by the way, mind you, which is lost on many or most people when you talk about this Gemara and this episode in history, We are not describing some hoodlums, some gang members, some lowlives somewhere who were disrespectful to one another. Who are we describing? And yet they were disrespectful. Who are we describing? These are the students of Rabbi Akiva. These are B'nai Torah. These are B'nai Yeshiva. These are people who study sacred Torah all day long. So what does that mean? Didn't the Torah mold and shape them? Didn't that study of Torah penetrate into them? Didn't it craft them and condition them into becoming Torah personalities? We don't just learn academically or theoretically. We take it with us into our interpersonal relationships. We take it into business, in the gym, and shopping, and life, and our home. It doesn't remain something which is intellectual. It has to be put into practice. So how could it be 24,000 yeshiva bachram, 24,000 students of Torah, and lo nagu kovod zebezeh? Now the question is compounded. Because who is Rabbi Akiva? What is he most famous for? What sentence in the Torah? I'll give you a hint. We read it last week's parsha. What pasuk in the Torah was Rabbi Akiva's bumper sticker? Was his yearbook quote? When they said Rabbi Akiva, he didn't study Torah until long after his yearbook was done. But had he been a student of Torah when he had a yearbook, and they said, Rabbi Akiva, what would you like on your yearbook page? He would not have paused or hesitated. It would have been clear. What's his bumper sticker? V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Not only does he say, love your neighbor as yourself, he then says, zeklal gadol b'Torah. This is the most important principle. This is the bumper sticker, the motto of the Jewish people. Love your neighbor as yourself. So you understand how incongruous, you understand how complicated the Rebbe, the master teacher, lived by the motto, love your neighbor as yourself. And he did such a poor job in communicating and transmitting it that 24,000 of his students died. And why did they die? Because they couldn't love their neighbor as themselves. Where was that breakdown? What went wrong? How is that possible? How is that possible? So I want to share with you a Shem Yishmuel. Sachet Shav Rebbe. Shem Yishmuel, Lag Ba'omer, the Sachet Shav Rebbe says the following. He says that every person has a certain skill or talent. Everybody has different that complements the people around us, but it's different than the people around us. No one person is perfect in all areas. We have areas that were better and areas that were worse, areas that we've achieved and areas that need work, and we complement one another. And if you match person to person, we're all different. And that's similar to each limb, the limbs of the body. Your heart doesn't do what your kidneys, doesn't do what your pancreas, doesn't do what your elbow, doesn't do what your ear. Each of the limbs of the body all have another purpose, another skill, another talent, another reason they're here. And yet, they have to work together. They're all part of one body. They're all part of one unit, and they need to learn how to cooperate and how to work together. That's the idea of Isha Chad B'Lev Echad. Remember, we're counting up towards Har Sinai. We're going back to the mountain together. And when we were at that mountain, we were Vayachanu Sham, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. It should say Vayachanu in the plural. It says in the singular, we encamped at the mountain. Why? Rashi says, Ki Isha Chad B'Lev Echad, on the logo of the Boca Raton Synagogue. We were Isha Chad B'Lev Echad, like one person with one heart, even though separate limbs, but all those separate limbs and organs were functioning together as one heart. And that was the mistakes of the Shem Yishmuel. Every tzaddik, every person lives in his own world. And granted that communally we're one united nation, but as individuals we have our own unique life. And therefore we need to be able to respect and have that mutual respect that each one of us is different. That's what the Shem Yishmuel says. But I have a good friend, Rav Yoni Levin, who was here recently, Rav Yoni Levin, and he said, did he speak? He didn't. Next time he comes down. Rav Yoni Levin, and he offered the following suggestion, which I really, really appreciate, I really like. And he says the following. He says, Shalonu God lo nagu kavod zebazeh. Notice, says Rabbi Levin, he's the assistant rabbi in Esh Kodesh in Woodmere. Notice, says Rav Yoni, that Rabbi Akiva used to teach v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha. What's the verb? V'yahavta, I'll help you out. What does v'yahavta mean? Love. So the core of Rabbi Akiva's teaching was love. The students died, shalonagu kavod. What's the verb? What did they not have? Respect. What's the difference between love and respect? Because that's where you find the breakdown. Rabbi Akiva said you have to love, and the Gemara says they are indicted on the fact that they didn't have respect. What's the difference between love and respect? And Rabbi Yoni Levin says the following. He says we tend to love the people who are exactly like us. We love the people just like us. Oh, I love her. She's so cute. She's so amazing. We listen to the same music and we wear the same outfits and we love the same things and we're excited about them. We go to the same camp and I love her. She's so amazing. We love the people that are exactly like us. They love the same things that we love. They act the same way that we act. They vote for the same things we vote. They root for the same things we wrote. They listen to the same thing. We love the people just like us. That's Ava. That's love. Whom do we respect? Kavod. You know when someone's in an argument with someone? I always know where it's going when someone says to me, Rabbi, with all due respect. You know what that's a hint for? Let me loosely translate. With all due respect means I am about to disrespect you and everything. You don't use the words with all due respect unless you're coming at with something that could be interpreted as not respectful. With all due respect. Listen, I disagree, but I respect their right to be wrong. I respect their right to root for the Red Sox. It's ridiculously wrong. I respect it. So love are the people who are exactly like me, and respect are the people who are different than me, and I have to respect them. So we love the people with the common interest, the common goal, the common lifestyle, and we respect the people we're supposed to respect, the people who are different, but we can respect them nonetheless. Here was the breakdown, suggests Rabbi Yoni Levin, and I love this. He says, you know what Rabbi Akiva was teaching? You gotta love. You gotta see yourself as the same. We're in the same boat. We have the same destiny. We have the same history. And even with all of our differences, we're all essentially the same. But the Gemara says, you know where the students went wrong? Shelo nagu kavod zeh bezeh. They saw themselves as all different, and with the differences, they were unable to respect one another. So you know why Rabbi Akiva's teaching fell flat on them? They didn't hear it. Rabbi Akiva never talked about kavod. He only talked about ava. Rabbi Akiva never spoke about love. Never spoke about respect. He only spoke about love. You know why? He didn't think he had to speak about respect because there was no one he saw as different than him. You only need to respect someone if you believe that fundamentally you're different. We're different, but I respect you. If you see someone as fundamentally different, then you need to find respect for them, which his students couldn't do. But if you see everyone as essentially the same, then you feel a love. You don't ever have to get to respect. Because the starting point in the beginning is that you're essentially all the same. So Rabbi Akiva's teaching fell flat, not because he was a bad teacher, and not because he didn't live it himself, but because they were having two separate conversations. Rabbi Akiva began with the assumption that we're all the same, so it's easy to love everybody. You dress different, think different, go to a different camp, and are totally different. Yeah, but still, we're essentially the same. With all of our differences, when push comes to shove, we're basically the same. We have so much more in common than we have that separates us. And when we focus and emphasize and zone in on what we have together the same, then you feel a love of what you see as the same as you in the other. It's love. You're united. It's one. It's love. Ava, echad, the same gematria. It's one. Love makes you feel one. But if you see the other one is different and apart and is the other, you're supposed to honor them. Those students failed to honor them. They never should have gotten to the point of needing to honor them. They should have been feeling love for them. That, he suggests, is the breakdown between them. And that's the answer Rabbi Akiva was giving them. When Rabbi Akiva said, "Avihavta l'recha kamocha zeh klal gadol b'Torah," this is the most important driving principle, the motto, the bumper sticker of the Jewish people. Do we know when he said that? Did he say that before he lost 24,000 students? Or was that his teaching and his conclusion after coming back from 24,000 funerals, saying to himself, you know what they were missing? Lo nagu kavod zeh bezeh. They couldn't find the kavod, the ability to honor, because they saw themselves as different. I have to remind them, v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. The Torah doesn't say you should respect your neighbor as yourself. It says you should love your neighbor as yourself. See the part of yourself in the neighbor and never ever get to that point of sinas chinam. So says the Chida, you know what Lag BaOmer is celebrating? By the way, can anyone tell me the name of any of those 24,000 students? Can you share with me one teaching, point to one Mishnah or Gemara, of any of the students who died in the plague? 24,000 students. Can you share with me one teaching? It says, Mori V'Rabbi Rav Asher Weiss Shlita in his Minchas Asher Chelek Gimel on Moedim. He says, you can't. You know why? Not one teaching of one of those students survived. Because students who can't treat one another respectfully and honorably and love one another, the teachings are corrupt. The teachings are imperfect. The teachings don't belong part of our canon. And so you can't quote and you don't know the name of any of those 24,000 students. But I'll tell you who you can quote. And I'll tell you whose names you do know. You know what Rabbi Akiva did next? Do you know what he did next? Rabbi Akiva found 5 students. And even though there was persecution and great risk to their lives, Rabbi Akiva found the next 5 students and sat them down and said, let's start again. Do you know their names? You recognize every one of their names. And not only do you recognize every one of their names, you'll recognize their teachings. Because what Rav Asher Weiss says so beautifully, and I can't help but feel we're starting to be out of time, so I'm not going to elaborate fully, but he says, you'll notice that these particular students, the author of the Mishnah, Stam Mishnah, is his student, Rabbi Meir, Rav Meir Balanes. The Sifra is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, the Sifri Rabbi Shimon, the Tosefta Rabbi Nechemya. All of them are Rabbi Akiva's second generation of students. They are the who's who. They are the ambassadors. They pass the baton. We only have Torah, we only have Halacha, we only have an act of Judaism because of those students. Says the Chida, you know what the miracle of Lag BaOmer is? You know what we're celebrating? We're not celebrating that 24,000 students stopped dying. Listen very carefully. You know what we're celebrating? We're celebrating what Rabbi Akiva did next. I'll tell you, if I had to deliver 1,000 eulogies a day, if I went to 24,000 funerals, you know what I'd probably say to myself? I'd say, well, listen, I stand for V'yahavta l'recha kamocha. I got 24,000 students, and they all didn't learn it because they all died from a plague because they couldn't treat each other respectfully. You know what the very next thing I do is? I retire. I'm done. Obviously, I'm not cut out for this. If I have not communicated to one of my students, I have 24,000 failures on how to treat each other, the very next thing I do is I hang them up, I retire, I resign, I'm done. I'm on to the next thing. I'm clearly not meant for this. You know what Rabbi Akiva does instead? Rabbi Akiva identifies 5 new students. And he says, you, come with me. We're going to be on the run. We're going to be in hiding. We're risking our lives. But you know what we're going to do? We're not going to quit. And we're not going to give up. And this story is too important that we have to continue to tell it. And therefore, we're going to keep Judaism alive. And we can appreciate this because we have relatives still alive who lived this and did this. Anyone who knows a Holocaust survivor, it's exactly what they did. Could you imagine you lose all your loved ones, parents and siblings, in some case a spouse and children? You lose them in the concentration camp, in the gas chamber, they're mowed down and they're murdered in the street. And you somehow miraculously survive and you limp out a skeleton, barely alive, gasping for air. I don't know, you know what I might do? I might say, this Judaism thing hasn't turned out so well. It cost me everyone I love and everything I care about. So maybe it's time to move on. We have a country, America, that's inviting us and welcome us and tells us, you don't have to be Jewish if you don't want to. You could drop it. You can move on. You could turn in your card. You could walk away. But those incredible Holocaust survivors who we know and many of us descend from and wouldn't be here without, you know what they did? I said, are you kidding me? It's time to double down. It's time to do this again. We're going to build yeshivas and seminaries and schools and mikvahs and eruv and kashrus. And as skeletons who can barely breathe in a foreign country with a new language, we are going to give all the money that we have because this story needs to continue and it needs to continue to be told and it needs to continue to impact the world. You know what Lag BaOmer says, the Chida? It is the holiday of doubling down, of not giving up. It is the holiday of even after stumbling or falling, even after a failure, nevertheless continuing and trying again because Judaism matters. It has transformed the world and there's still much more work to do to repair it and make it a better place. So we don't give up and we don't walk away and we don't turn it in. You know what we do? Like Rabbi Akiva. We get up, we come back from the last Shiva call, we walk home from the last funeral, and the next thing we do is, who wants to learn? Who are my new students? And you know what the lessons they gave us? Says Rav Asher Weiss, that's the Chida. But says Rav Asher Weiss, of the 24,000 students, the first generation, we don't know one name, we don't have one teaching, and they have no legacy, they don't live on. And these next 5 students, they are Torah. They are the totality of Rabbinic Judaism, of our Torah Shabbat Peh. So I'll give you very, very quickly and end with this. It says, Rav Meir, Kol Mavarach Es Yisrael, Kilo Mavarach Es Hashchina. Anyone who blesses a fellow Jew, it's like you bless God. It says, Rav Meir, Havei Shva Ruach B'fnei Kol Adam, be humble before everyone. It said Rabbi Yehuda, his student, Shekom Yishan Mekal B'nei Chavim, Kilo Mekal B'nei Hashchina. When you greet a friend, a fellow human, a neighbor, it is as if you're greeting God himself. Said Rabbi Yehuda, Miyamai Lo Avarti Al Divrei Chavere Yodei Ani Ba'atmi She'eni Koinim Omrim Li Chavere Alay Duchan Ani Ola. I never violated the word or the wish of my friend. Whatever they asked me to do, I jumped and I did. Said Rabbi Yehuda, afilo here enov el mishnah acha zui rabo. If someone taught you even the smallest thing, they're your teacher, they're your Rebbe. Give them honor. Rav Shimon bar Yochai taught, noach la'adu sheyipol atzmo l'kivshon eishva ayab b'necha ver barabim. Said Rav Shimon bar Yochai, better for you to enter a fiery furnace, better for you to die than embarrass someone ever publicly. Says Rav Elazar ben Shamoa, yi kavod tamitcha chaviv alecha kishalcha, that the honor of your student should be as important as your own honor. Said Rabbi Nechemia, ba'avam sin eschinam meriva rabba besoch beso shel adam. For the sin of hating others, you have problems in your house. Rabbi Meir, and the Gemaras go on and on and on. Rav Usher Weiss, who knows them all by heart, organized them all in a beautiful essay in his Sefer and basically proves. You know why these students' lessons lived? Because they all focused on how we treat one another. Not the differences that would demand kavod, but the similarity that breeds unity. That's what we need, and that is the antidote and response. So in closing, like B'Omer, we asked, party, fireworks, bonfire, celebration, music, haircuts, because people stop dying, that makes no sense. Chassam Sofer says it makes so little sense that it's not the reason. Why do we celebrate Lag BaOmer? Hod Shebahod. The mun began to fall. It's a day of gratitude, of not taking anything for granted. And that's why we make a bracha, a Svir Asa Omer. We're counting the portion, the blessing in our lives. Not the days of the Omer. We're counting the portion in our lives. What a gift, Nosin Lech L'Nechol Basar. And so this Lag BaOmer, every one of us celebrate, dance, sing, and party for the things that we take for granted. Party with gratitude, with appreciation, to never take anything granted again. Says the Chida, we're not grateful that people stopped dying that day. You know what we're grateful for? That Rabbi Akiva didn't give up. That he started again. That he went weiter. That there was still more to do. And when we run into a wall, when we fail, when we stumble, when we're ready to walk away, we have to remember that the future generations rely on us. And Rabbi Akiva learned his lesson. And therefore he had students who didn't need kavod zebazeb because they didn't see differences. He found students who only saw similarity, and therefore all of their teachings revolve around how we treat one another. Wishing everyone a beautiful and a festive and a light and a holy Lag BaOmer, in which we not only treat one another with the utmost of love, not just respect, but we take everything in our life, we see the blessing, and take none of it for granted.